from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're going to finish off the Forum program today talking about beer. SF Beer Week kicks off its 11th celebration today, drawing fans and connoisseurs to local taprooms. So we thought we'd bring in two people who can guide you through this big Bay Area-wide event. They also know a lot about beer and can probably answer any questions you might have. These days, all the variety and innovation in the beer world is both exciting and a lot to take in. So let me tell you who's joining us. John Hall is here. He's senior editor of Craft Beer and Brewing magazine. He's also the author of Drink Beer, Think Beer, Getting to the Bottom of Every Pint, and co-host of the Steal This Beer podcast. Good morning, John Hall.
Good morning. It's not often I get to follow the Speaker of the House, so thanks so much for having me on.
Well, we're glad to have you. And Esther Mobley is also with us. She is a wine, beer, and spirits writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning, Esther Mobley.
Good morning.
And you have just published your guide to Beer Week. First, start by just telling us, how big has it gotten now?
Beer Week is a little, the size and scope of it is hard to measure because it's comprised of hundreds of events that breweries themselves post and add. But there's hundreds and hundreds of events. San Francisco Beer Week is the second oldest beer week in the country. Philly Beer Week preceded it. All you have to do is walk around the Bay Area this coming week, and it's clear everywhere, bars, restaurants, breweries, spaces that aren't normally serving beer at all are totally consumed by it.
And I like the fact that it basically was conceived because February tends to be a slow month generally for business, and this is a way to generate it.
Yeah, and a lot of local bar owners have told us what used to be the slowest month of the year for beer sales has become the strongest month of the year.
Well, John Hall, you've written about how we're in a beer renaissance of sorts. What makes you say that?
Well, right now we have 7,100 breweries operating in the country, and obviously California has the most breweries out of all of the 50 states at this point, mostly because of size and population, but I also think because of the interest that comes with it. And with so much choice, with so many breweries open, there are so many different recipes that brewers are trying to make. There's innovation happening all the time. When you think about what happened right after Prohibition, when we came out of 13 years of darkness, essentially, we gravitated as a country towards one style of beer and one style of beer only, and that was the American light lager. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, but there wasn't a lot of choice. It's basically like being able to have Wonder Bread for the rest of your life. And so about 40 or so years ago, microbreweries, now known as craft breweries or independent breweries or just small breweries or breweries, however you want to call them, started to pop up and offer choice. And so we are in this wonderful, wonderful age where so many recipes are on offer, and there are people who dedicate their lives to furthering beer culture, both through events like this and through running great bars and to making it themselves. So if you're a beer drinker in 2019 right now, this is the best time in the history of mankind to be a beer drinker if you like variety.
Esther Mobley, though, you have been writing about how we're seeing the rate of new brewery openings slow down or just beginning to slow down. How is the craft brew industry doing? And I specifically do ask about craft beer.
Yeah, well, the macro picture is that beer sales nationally, all beer, including non-craft beer, have been on the decline every year for the last several years. Craft beer is still growing, but it's growing at an increasingly slowing rate. The kind of crazy boom we were seeing a few years ago is just slowing down a little bit. The Brewers Association expects growth this year, for instance, for craft beer nationwide to be about 5%. And that's really a kind of healthy stabilization of an industry that went through a crazy, huge boom period. It simply wouldn't be realistic to keep up with that growth. In San Francisco alone, we have 34 breweries, and 16 of them opened within the last 5 years. Oh. So we simply can't sustain that kind of growth every year.
Well, it's also hard to do business.
Yeah.
Startups have a lot of initial costs. But backing up just a little, John Hall, you've written about the term craft itself and what it means. Can you explain why you think that word is starting to lose some of its meaning, actually?
Sure. Well, the word craft came on or came in vogue, maybe about 20 or so years ago. And it was born out of the need to differentiate some of these small brewers from what the large brewing companies were doing. And large brewing companies like Anheuser-Busch InBev or MillerCoors or Heineken and some others that are out there. And it was a way of distinguishing not only the flavors that you were getting, but ownership. And over the last decade or so, we've seen AB InBev, which is the largest brewing company in the world, on the planet. They've started to buy up smaller breweries. And so they own brands like 10 Barrel in Bend, Oregon, and Golden Road in Los Angeles. And they own Blue Point out in Long Island and Goose Island, certainly, out of Chicago, which is one of their flagships, and Elysian up in Seattle. And as they've bought these smaller breweries, they've continued to use the word craft, because that's what those breweries started off as or being known as. And so they've continued to use that. And it's blurred the lines as to what the word means. And so the Brewers Association, which was mentioned before, which is a nonprofit trade group that represents small brewers that fit within their membership guidelines, has started to use the word independent in the last couple of years, which really signifies ownership. As it were. So, you know, support your independent brewery, know where your money is going, know where your choice is going. In the book, in Drink Beer, Think Beer, I make the point, though, that whether we're using the word micro or craft or even independent these days, it does talk about a certain type of business, but it doesn't talk about the beer itself, the liquid itself. And the issue is that there's still breweries that open today that are making beers that have noticeable flaws to them. They're undercarbonated, or they have flavors that don't belong in a particular style, or they just are not pleasing when you taste them. And so by trying to put some of these definitions on the type of beer, I think is doing a larger disservice. You know, good beer is good beer. You know, if you want to vote with your dollars, then you absolutely should, you know, give your money to businesses who you agree with. But don't suffer because of that on your palate.
Well, we're talking beer in honor of SF Beer Week. The Bay Area beer scene will be hopping with SF Beer Week drawing fans to local taprooms.
Oh, there it is.
We're learning about this year's big events and getting beer tips, including how to judge good craft beer, from John Hall. What are your questions for our guests about beer, Beer Week, the beer industry, trends in the beer industry? Or tell us what event you're looking forward to during this now 11-year tradition. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, tweet us at KQED Forum, or email us at forum@kqed.org. So, Esther Mobley, tell us about some of the highlights of this year's Beer Week, something that you're really interested in trying, or some changes that you've noticed this year.
One of the big headlines this year is Pliny the Younger is this cult beer produced by Russian River Brewing Company up in Santa Rosa. It's a triple IPA, and I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with it. It's released only once a year, always during Beer Week. So tomorrow, Saturday, is the yearly release, and it's only available for 2 weeks. People come from around the world, camp out outside the brewery.
Yes.
It's a, you know, if you live in Santa Rosa, you probably hate it. And this year, the Russian River Brewing Company has actually opened a second brewery in Windsor, just north of Santa Rosa, and they've more than doubled the production of Pliny the Younger. So now this year, instead of only being available at the Santa Rosa Brewery, it's also available at the Windsor Brewery. You can actually book a tour at the Windsor Brewery, which means you can make a reservation in advance and don't have to wait in a line for 2 days, and you get a pour of Pliny. And Pliny's also going to be available at a lot of Beer Week events in the city. It's going to be at an event at Bobby G's Pizza on February 9th. It's going to be at the Bistro in Hayward, which has a double IPA festival every year. That's tomorrow. It's going to be at a triple IPA festival at Monk's Kettle on February 6th. So for people who have been trying for years to get a sip of this nectar, this might be your year, finally.
But isn't part of the madness around Pliny the fact that it is so hard to get?
Yeah, and it's a really interesting thing. If you talk to Russian River Brewing Company's owners, Natalie and Vinny Chalurzo, they really hate the scarcity. They feel like it's not a good experience. No one appreciates having to wait for so long. They want their beer to be in more people's hands. And they seem really genuinely trying to kind of increase the accessibility. And that's one of the reasons they built this huge, expensive new brewery and brew pub in Windsor.
Well, Rick writes, I'm on a break from alcohol. Can your guests recommend any craft non-alcoholic beers?
Ooh,
that's a tough one.
Yeah.
John Hall can.
Well, yeah. So in the upcoming issue of Craft Beer and Brewing magazine, I actually just finished writing a piece on the rise of non-alcoholic beers that are coming into vogue right now. You know, it's interesting. The beer industry, as craft drinkers begin to age, you know, I'm about to hit 40 myself, we're starting to think a little bit more about our health. And so we're starting to see breweries put out lower ABV beers or beers that are built towards drinking and refreshment after running a marathon or workouts or things like that. And the non-alcoholic trend is really starting to take off. So Brooklyn Brewery, which is launching in California this week, thanks to San Francisco Beer Week, they have a non-alcoholic beer. They have a lot of European partnerships, one in Sweden and some in Asia as well. And In Europe, where non-alcoholic beer is like 10% of the marketplace, they have seen that there's some white space to fill in, and so they're going to try to bring that here to the U.S. So they have one. Heineken is introducing its 0.0 here in the U.S. There is a brewery out in California called Surreal, which is doing a red IPA and a porter, both non-alcoholic. And when I say non-alcoholic, it's about 0.5%. ABV. So
well, great.
It's essentially like what, you know, the high that you'd get off of a hit of mouthwash.
Well, perfect.
Which I don't recommend doing, by the way. but still, if you're looking for the comparison, as it were. So there are options out there. There's a whole brewery in Connecticut called Athletic, which is shipping across the country as well. I believe they're shipping across the country. Because the cool thing is that with these non-alcoholics, they're not necessarily hit with the same distribution that you get with beer in the three-tiered system, that they fall into different categories. And so they can be shipped through the mail. You can find them in different aisles, different food stores where you wouldn't necessarily find beer.
Well, perfect timing for Rick's question. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Let me go to Alex now in Richmond. Hi, Alex.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm the one of the owners and brewers here at Armistice Brewing in Richmond.
Oh, hey, Alex.
Hey, Esther. Good to hear you on the air. I'm just calling in to send some love out to our friends at Temescal Brewing, who are doing a great job of advancing some important conversations in craft beer. They've done, you know, throughout the year, they've done a great job embracing the queer, non-binary, and trans community. And for Beer Week, they've got an awesome Women on Craft panel coming up. Obviously, as a woman in beer, I'm very excited about that. And they've got a really important conversation on people of color, black folks, diversity in beer on Friday. And I just think it's really important that we keep having these conversations.
I do, too. I'm curious, has the, you know, beer industry, what has it done to make itself more inclusive to women and people of color? Because it has traditionally been the domain of white males, essentially.
Yeah, guys like me. Yeah.
Well, I will say, and Alex, thanks for bringing that up. My colleague at The Chronicle, Alyssa Pereira, is actually going to be moderating that panel about women in beer at Temescal. And I think Beer Week has done a really great job of introducing some of these conversations. Last year at the Beer Week opening gala, Alex and my colleague Alyssa had led a conversation. And Mission Cheese is also going to be hosting an event this week called Mash the Patriarchy, which I think is great, that showcases women brewers, of which there certainly aren't enough.
Well, thanks, Alex, for that. And I'm going to go next to Bonnie in Santa Rosa. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Hey, just an observation and maybe some comments from the professionals there. Beer has traditionally kind of been seen as the drink of the working person, right? And yet, I notice when I go, and I live in an area blessed with wonderful, wonderful beer. When I go out to brew pubs, I notice, you know, you're paying $5.50 to $7.50 and up for a pint of beer, and that seems a little on the high side. I'm a little surprised at the climb in price, and I just wondered if your folks have any insight about that, or maybe just kind of get the word out there to the community to give us a little happy hour break.
John Hall?
Well, I think that if you're only accustomed to the American Light Lager that I was talking about earlier, you might expect to pay less than that. If you walk into a packaged goods store and you see a six-pack of Budweiser selling for $4, you're going to obviously be a little outraged when you see something for $7.50. I'm based in New York, by the way, and $7.50 sounds like a dream compared to the $10 pints that we see out here. You're paying for quality. It's if you go to the butcher, there's a difference between the Nathan's hot dogs and the good sausages from the butcher down the street. I think if you see the value in the product that you're getting, the price is in line with that. Certainly, there are some breweries that do some price gouging now and again, but those are few and far between, and those are usually pretty much course corrected. Remember that when you buy a pint of beer from your local brewery, you're keeping their roof over their head. You're keeping their employees paid. You're keeping them as a part of the community as well. It's not just a pint of beer. It's community. It's the local economy as well.
Mr. Mobley.
Yeah. And I think, Bonnie, what we're seeing a lot of is really, to John's point, a kind of care toward quality that really wasn't seen before. So especially in the Bay Area, where the cost of doing business, especially for these young breweries, is really high, they're sourcing really pristine ingredients. A lot of these breweries who are experimenting with mixed fermentation, sour beers, they're buying wine barrels. They're buying fresh fruit. Now a lot of people are buying craft malt. They're not just buying industrial kind of homogenous malt from the same mega producers. And so the way you probably see you're paying extra for a beautiful farm-to-table meal where you know who grew it and the restaurant's paying its workers really fairly. I think we're just seeing that with beer too. And the less expensive, more industrial beer isn't going away. Maybe it will only get cheaper. But I think we're just seeing a kind of more diverse range of options out there.
John Hall, for people who want to refine their palate a little bit, because as you were saying, sometimes words get tossed around and added to beers that don't really deserve them. What would you recommend in terms of trying to find the difference between a high quality and a low quality beer for somebody who is willing to pay to shell out for a good beer?
I think it's important to find flavors that you like in everyday life and then try to apply them to your beer. And so the four main ingredients of beer are water, malt, hops, and yeast, as it were, right? And all of those have their own flavor components to them. And so, you know, hops, for example, which can be really polarizing to a lot of folks who haven't experienced craft beer or small batch beer. Again, it's only like 13% of the overall beer drinking marketplace right now. So 87% of people have still not fully experienced like what craft beer can offer. And hops, because we call them bitter all the time, can be a real big turnoff. But if you think about grapefruit, or you think about pine, or you think about strawberries or peaches or mangoes or pineapples, all of these flavors come from different varieties of hops. And so if you walk into a brewery and you say, "Yeah, boy, I really like grapefruit in the morning. Do you have an IPA that has some grapefruit flavors?" And they might steer you that way. Or if you say, "Oh, I really like coffee," they might steer you towards a stout or a porter. Or if you say, "Oh, I really like spicy, banana and clove," they might steer you towards a Hefeweizen. Using everyday food terms and food understandings that that we experience outside of beer and applying them to beer, I think can help you find something that you like and distinguish something like, "Oh, I like the tropical fruit flavor in this IPA versus the tropical fruit flavor in that IPA," because you know what you're looking for with your personal preference.
Well, Warren has a question. Hi, Warren in San Anselmo.
Hi. Yeah. First of all, I just want to say one of the only good things about getting older is the beer has gotten so much better. So thank you. And but on that note, also, there's a health issue recently that glyphosate has been found in beer more and more. And just wondering if you have recommendations on organic beer. I know Hopworks in Portland is one, but others in the Bay Area, perhaps?
Mr. Mobley, you want to start?
Well, I know Thirsty Bear has really led, which is based here in San Francisco, has really led the cause on that. And, you know, to be honest, I don't know of a lot of other local breweries that advertise the plant material they're working with and whether it's organic. I think that's something I would love to hear more from local breweries. And, yeah.
And John Hall, any thoughts about organic beer?
Nationally, it's tough to come by. You know, we did have a couple of solely organic breweries that were operating in the country for a while. It's very cost prohibitive for them, and it's tough to verify in a lot of ways. And so, you know, the best is to talk with your local breweries, let them know what you're looking for. You know, certainly up in Oregon and Northern California, there's been salmon-safe beer. There's been salmon-safe ingredients. In fact, there's a beer festival last year that celebrated beers that use ingredients that didn't cause, you know, hazardous environmental impacts to the salmon runs, which is quite nice. And those breweries also have that same sort of environmental bent to them. You know, but Admiral Maltings there in the Bay Area, you know, they're certainly trying to work with the best quality ingredients as well. But it really comes down to talking with your local brewery, expressing your concern. And that's the cool thing. You can walk into a brewery. You can meet the brewers. You can meet the owners. It's not some large anonymous corporation. These are people who live and work where you live and work. And if they hear your concerns, they're likely to make a change.
And again, John Hall is senior editor of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine and author of Drink Beer, Think Beer. And Esther Mobley is the wine, beer, and spirits writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. And let's hear from some more of our listeners. Let's go to Danita in Santa Rosa. Hi, Danita.
Hi, actually, it's Anita.
Anita, okay, great, thanks.
I'm sure people are listening. I wanted to talk about beer and pairings and how beer has become so sophisticated now that you can do entire meals based around the flavors of the food and how they compare and blend with the beers. For example, I don't particularly like bitter beers. Like, I had some Pliny recently, and I knew to have some sort of a spicy food with it so that it would enhance the flavor of the beer and enhance my enjoyment of the beer as well as the meal itself.
Anita, that's a good point. Are there just some basics you can tell us about how to pair beers, Esther Mobley?
Well, I think as with any kind of food and beverage pairing, there's two ways of looking at it. One is a kind of contrasting thing. So you want a drink that's going to kind of be a foil to your food. And the bitter beer with the spicy food is an example of that. Another way of looking at it would be something complementary, where if you have, let's say, a kind of coffee or pastry stout that has those warm baking spice flavors, it might taste good with something sweet. For Beer Week, people go all out for it. And we have a number of food pairing events here. There's, on Super Bowl day, there's a lot of barbecue and Southern food with beer events. But Fort Point Brewery, one of our local San Francisco breweries, is doing a dim sum pairing brunch at Hong Kong Lounge tomorrow. And Alvarado Street, which is a fabulous brewery out of Monterey, is doing a beer pairing dinner at Bar Crudo, which is a restaurant here in San Francisco that specializes in raw fish preparation. So I think that's, and you know, these there you're going to see a range from those really intense bitter hoppy beers like the IPAs to sour beers, which have a whole range of other characteristics and might actually take on some wine-like characteristics when paired with food.
John Hall, something you wrote about as we think more about drinking beer is that the glass matters, the type of glass the beer is served in matters, and that the pint glass might not always be the best choice. Explain that.
So really quick, though, so I wrote the American Craft Beer Cookbook a couple of years ago, which is all about pairing good beer with good food. And I would say that if you're nervous about bitter beers, not only do they work really well with spicy food like IPAs, but try it with some blue cheese and try it with some carrot cake.
Mm.
Not necessarily at the same time. But it really just shows how diverse beer is when it comes to pairing different things. So the pint glass is like the cockroach of beer glasses. And it's never going to go anywhere. It's easily stackable. Bars like it because they're durable. Breweries like it when you steal them and take them home with you to drink orange juice out of the morning because it has their logo in them on them and it keeps the top of mind. But it doesn't do much to really enhance the flavor of the beer. And so I'm a big fan of the tulip glass as well. And, you know, when I'm at home, I try to pour about two-thirds of a beer into a glass or to fill the glass about two-thirds of the way. So that way the aromas can actually come out as well. You know, it's when we see pint glasses in advertisements or at bars, we want it right up to the very, very tippy top of there because we're paying for 16 ounces. The problem is that you don't get the aromas off of the beer. And aroma is so important when you're drinking beer. So if you it's the same thing with a glass of wine. You don't fill it all the way up to the tippy top. Well, you know, unless you're like my friend John Page. But, you know, you get to this point where you need some space from where the beverage ends and where the top of the glass is to get your nose in there without getting it wet, to actually smell the beer, to experience the aromas, and it makes for a better drinking experience. And so something like a tulip glass or a stout glass, Spiegelau does some of these IPA glasses. There are specific glasses for specific styles out there, and spending a few minutes to research all of these goes a long way.
All right. Well, Lorenzo in Sebastopol. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd just like to say when I was in my 20s and 30s, I drank a lot of stronger beers, hopped beers, and now I've pulled back to pilsners and lagers. And my experience in the grocery aisle or even looking down the taps at the bar is pale ale, IPA, double IPA, triple IPA, and then a citrus IPA. And there's just not a lot of support for pilsners and lagers from all of these smaller companies.
Well, I think Esther Mobley agrees with you. She's nodding.
Yeah, I think IPA is king in the craft beer industry. And it's, you know, I keep thinking someday people are going to want to drink less IPA, but it still seems not to have happened. But I think there's a great movement of really delicious, lighter style beers being made among local California breweries. I mean, Russian River, they make a pilsner now. It's a pretty hoppy pilsner, actually, but I think it's a great kind of lighter option. Local brewing company here in San Francisco, which actually is a woman brewer, they make a light lager that I think is delicious and flavorful.
Well, Esther Mobley, wine, beer, and spirits writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, thanks for coming in today and giving us a great guide to how to approach Beer Week.
Thank you.
And same to you, John Hall, senior editor of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. His book is Drink Beer, Think Beer. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thanks so much. It was a real pleasure.
And thanks to our listeners for their calls and questions. I'm Mina Kim. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.